Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday, and this is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, I was just talking to my guest because we get the phone's just gone off about 5-10 minutes ago, and we've got a tornado warning. Well, tornadoes in Connecticut, people say, but yes, we do. In fact, when I first met my wife 8 years ago, she was down visiting me at one time, and her parents were here in the house here where we are now. And tornado not only visited Connecticut, but it touched down on this very house. It was all on the news and everything. You know, she had to try and get back from where she was to look to see her parents, who were quite unharmed. The house, different matter. But took her 2 hours to travel the sort of 20-minute journey to get here. And there was a tree in each corner of the house. And each tree fell over the house because of the way it twisted and that. But, you know, everybody was okay. And we got new sidings and windows out of it. It's a big mercenary, you know, as long as everybody was okay. It went good. But we do get these here in Connecticut. And in fact, they get the little smaller ones that just not quite so big, but they get them in England as well. There's been an increase in them in England. You see the odd sort of half a street disappear, something like that. But just how it is with these days with the weather. But we're talking to my guest as well, because you know, people know, you've heard sometimes, normally snoring, nothing else, the dog, 150-pound of Japanese Akita, big brave dog, currently hiding under the table. Cats, no problem. They're just carrying on their lives. But that's the way it goes. But that's the way my guess goes. Because one of these things when we get these authors on the show is, you know, if you're writing a subject, it's the studying of the subject, the investigation and stuff like that. That takes up quite a bit of time. But then if you want an expert, then you go to the people who know about these things. You've got something you don't know about, you go to the people who know about these things. That expert. Well, my guest today, he is the expert. Well, we'll talk a bit more about his life up to now, but he's not just the expert, he's the expert's expert. In other words, he actually teaches at SWAT teams and stuff like that. So why not write your own book if you're the expert, in which he has launched his first book? But we'll better find out more, because I didn't even ask about his name, so I'm going to muck it up. My guest today is the one and only Mike Witzkel. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir.
I hope I didn't muck your name up too much. I forgot.
No. It's pronounced exactly the way it's spelled. Just be glad that my grandfather dropped the Vaughn from the front of it.
Oh, crikey.
When he went to war in World War I.
So. Right. Oh, crikey, yeah. That would be too much.
Well, concerning that he was fighting on the side of the Allies.
Right, yeah. I think he had to. Yes, he had to.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the old guy had to.
Right. But as I said, you know, being the expert, because you were years in the military, non-commissioned and commissioned officer, so you worked your way right through the ranks.
Yes, I did. Had a little break in service. I got out and went to college and stayed in the reserves. But I was desperate for money for school, as most kids are at the time. And I went into ROTC and then took a direct commission from the Marine Corps into the Army, which I know my fellow Corps guys.
People were shuddering out there.
they shuddered. They got upset. But they all agree, you need money, you need money.
Right, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, and then when you did come out, as I said, you know, you did SWAT stuff with the police. Dallas, I think, wasn't it?
Well, yes. What I did was I retired from the military. I got hurt. Story of my life. You have to understand this. Story of my life is I keep getting hurt. I'm a Witzkel, and I take a lot of killing. So I left the military after a near-fatal parachuting accident. And,
wow.
I got on with Dallas. Now, it took me about a year to get on with Dallas, that long to get healthy, finish up rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And I was with Dallas about 16 years, give or take a little bit. And a line of duty injury forced me into retirement. I lost my left leg after getting hit by a car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had the leg crushed. It was a real mess. And it took several years, but eventually it led to an amputation.
Because I know you do underwater salvage, or you did do as well, didn't you? Or is that just teaching?
Yeah. No. I owned a business for several years that we did underwater salvage and recovery. In that time frame, we recovered somewhere around 200 watercraft from various lakes, and I also did a lot of contract crime scene, underwater crime scene preservation in Texas lakes. I don't never did a lot of stuff offshore while I owned this business. There's just a glut of businesses down there.
Right.
But nobody wants to work in Texas lakes.
Yeah, I follow some YouTube stuff, and I've forgotten the name of the person now, and they do the underwater stuff, and they're always finding sort of guns and things like that, you know, people chuck in the lakes, but it's not Texas lakes. It's a bit more dangerous, I'd have thought, in Texas lakes.
Texas lakes are nasty. There's only two natural lakes in Texas. The rest are all man-made.
Oh.
So it's everything we do underwater. And I haven't done this now in several years. I sold the business and retired from it. But everything we do underwater in Texas is pretty much by braille.
Right, yeah, because visibility is so bad, I guess.
Yeah, it's horrific, yeah.
And then, of course, now, you're a co-owner of your own company.
Yeah, we actually started this business as a part-time thing in 1998. Charlie Mike Enterprises, what we do is we teach everything from counter active shooter, all the way up to hostage rescue. In fact, I just finished a hostage rescue school last week. Since 1998, well, let me rephrase it. In 2005 was when I lost the leg. After that, Dallas retired me, and I went full on out with this business. Since then, we've trained somewhere around 5,000 police officers here in Texas.
Wow.
As many as 500 or 600 law enforcement agencies.
Have you found there's been, obviously, in the last 5, 10 years, a big increase in the requirement for you with how the country's going?
That's not a personal source of contention, but within law enforcement it is. We feel that we're being asked to do too much.
Yep.
That's for starters. Everything from a psychologist to a doctor, all this stuff. We can't possibly do it. Right now, the Dallas Police Department that I graduated from, this is back in 1988, was almost a year, and now it's an over a year of training for rookies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, smaller academies, it's still almost 6 months of training. Then they're on what we call field training for another 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, so, as you say, it's become, how can I put it? It's stopping the people doing their job by the G Officer Crabtree type environment, shall I say? Yeah, the West Side Story thing. Because and unfortunately, England's getting like it as well now. But it's like the same with teachers. Teachers can't teach anymore. They're so tied up in red tape and things you can't do, can do, etc. No matter what's done to you, it's just got one of these days. The whole thing's going to burst. I can see it, but whatever.
And that's I don't know if you know this, but not just in Texas, but throughout the entire country, almost every police department is either hiring, looking to hire, or will need to hire very shortly. And our problem, where I was going with when I was explaining the length of time in academies, is there's just so many subjects we have to cover now. Everything from use of force, which is, that's a normal subject.
Yeah.
But then we've got the critical incident, identifying mentally ill people. And gee whiz, they just came out with a new course we have to take in the academy or as continuing education called canine encounters. So if you meet a dog that wants to, bite you or rip your leg off,
right,
I guess we have to negotiate with them too.
You could, negotiate with the dog, yeah. I can see, I can see it. I don't think people know this, I don't think I told you this, but on the show, but I wanted to join the police when I was at school. I was 5'7.5" at the time, and the Met Police height limit was 5'8". So I was turned away because I was half an inch too short. I could have gone in the Hertfordshire Police, which Hertfordshire was where I lived, but it was another year before the next recruitment. And being the eldest in between time, when it had to go out and, you know, start learning the trade in those days. But yeah, so I mean, it's something I've always sort of kept an eye on, because it was something I was sort of very interested in when I was younger, sort of thing. But it is, and you say, you know, you've got to negotiate with a dog. Don't bite me, please.
You know? Please don't bite me. It's just, and I can't reiterate enough, you know, we're being asked to do so much that it's almost impossible to do what I would call real law enforcement. Most officers, my peers, all my buddies that I still have in Dallas work in the streets. They're so shorthanded. Dallas is somewhere around 1,000 officers short. All they can do is go from one call to another.
Right.
They can't set up on dope houses. They can't run traffic stops. I know everybody's happy about that part, but a great deal of crimes are solved on traffic stops. You know, we arrest bad guys with warrants and stuff like that.
Warrants and what they've got in with them, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It's, you know, but the first thing that you sort of read is, well, you know, where are the police? Well, what police? You know, as you say, every state is undermanned. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. Yeah. Along the way, you've done a lot of articles, I guess, for magazines and stuff like that. And training manuals, I've written, I'd have thought. Yeah.
Yes, I've written, and most of these are training articles about, you know, how to, you know, shape up your SWAT training. I've written a couple of articles on leadership, and then there's a couple of more articles that I've written on, you know, why we serve. I mean, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
And again, it's oriented all toward law enforcement. And I even wrote one on when to quit, when to stand down and walk away from this job. All these articles, especially the one on standing down, was very well received. And the unintended consequences is several of my very close friends that I've trained over the years called me up and said, Mike, you're right. It's time for me to stand down. I said, well, geez, that wasn't
everybody else. Whoops. Next thing you know, you're getting a letter through from the head of the police department. What are you doing?
Yeah, what is your malfunction? But you know, the intention of that article was to make. In fact, I do a short presentation in my basic SWAT, and even at the basic academy, is to let these kids understand. Look, we've all got expiration dates. Mm. Tattooed to our forehead and twice on the sides.
Right.
But, you know, in law enforcement, we tend not to pay attention, and it causes us a lot of problems.
Can imagine. I get your success from, obviously, these articles and the manuals. Is that what finally pushed you into writing a novel?
Well, a little bit. My agent and publisher, Patty Nunn, P.J. Nunn.
Yeah, P.J.,
She at the time, she was doing conferences for book writers that were tired of their mystery novels or their thrillers being tossed aside because of law enforcement inaccuracies. So Patty brought me in to do presentations on things like police shooting, crime scene preservation, and we'd even set up a little crime scene. And as these things, as a side note, as these things went on, these conferences, the crime scenes got better and better and more intricate, and the stories that we developed with them were a lot of fun. A byproduct of this was I would tell a lot of stories, mm-hmm. some funny, some not so funny, at these conferences, and people started telling, man, you need to write your own book. You need to tell these stories. And the best advice I actually had was from a very popular author by the name of Elaine Veitz. She was a guest speaker with me. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Elaine told me was, Mike, if you're not writing these stories, somebody else will. You need to get after it.
Yeah, with not the knowledge or the information that you have, sort of thing. So yes, you're right. So you started writing, and this is your debut book, and this is called Sentinel's Dilemma.
That's the second book. The first book was Sentinel's Choice.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There was a book before that.
Okay, I've got it. Sentinel's Choice. I'm sorry. I skipped the line. I skipped the line. So Sentinel's Choice was the first book, and how was that received?
Yes. Very well. Had tremendous feedback on it. Now, I have to confess, it took me longer to write the second book than it should have, but I do have an excuse. I taught 60 law enforcement classes.
Wow.
SWAT schools in the interim. But both books have been very well received. One of the things I have asked people is, of course, you know, say something on, what is it, Amazon, where they can order the book, give us some feedback, rate the book. And it's you know, I've been thrilled with its success.
Now, obviously, you know, there's a lot of your own personal things gone, Sergeant Rene Lafleet being our hero, because he's lost his leg as well.
Yes, at the end of the first book. And I don't want to get into too much of it.
Of course, through various circumstances,
he's in a big fight and then a shootout, and the injury, of course, to his leg, infections took his leg. And that's how the first book ends. Sentinel's Dilemma picks up where the first book left off. And the dilemma in that book is Lafleet is trying to decide if he should stay in law enforcement. Like most military guys, because Lafleet is a former Marine, reconnaissance Marine, and he recognizes the fact that, you know, if I want to get myself killed, that's one thing, but I don't have a right to endanger my team and my friends. Mm-hmm. And throughout the book, he's really and truly struggling with this.
Yes, all the time he's well, it's a double issue he's after, isn't he? Like a serial rapist and a serial killer.
Yes.
So all the time he's sort of trying to work through that challenge. He's got his own dilemma of what to do, you know, with his own life.
With his own life, it's you know, the first book, Sentinel's Choice, boils down to things that he must do. Someone that he cares for a great deal, they think, is a serial killer, and if anybody's going to take him out, it has to be Lafleet. Mm. All right, so that's a big choice. Then, of course, a big choice is at the end, and again, I'm not giving anything away here, but the choice as to how he's going to die.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, so, again, yeah, as you say, a choice which very hard to, you know, to know. Your mind sways you in different directions, I'm sure. What about within the police service itself? You know, people appreciate the accuracy?
Well, yes, they do. And one of the biggest things that compliments I've received was from several patrol officers in Dallas that read it, and they said, you know, the patrol officers aren't a big part of the story, but they are in the story. And they said, man, you make us look good. And you point out how difficult the job really is for the I hate to say the common patrol officer. That's like saying the common infantryman. There's no such thing as common in those jobs.
Right. No, I mean, everybody's every day, every hour is different, I'd have thought.
Every call.
Yeah.
That's one thing, you know, I was a patrol officer. I was SWAT. I was a detective. And then I went back to patrol. And I'm a patrol dog. I love patrol. But you know, and it gets back to my military roots. In the military, in the Marine Corps, I was infantryman, and then eventually I went into force reconnaissance. That is the Marine Corps' version of the Navy SEALs or the Green Beret.
Okay.
But I have always had a passion for the infantry.
Yeah, I mean, they're the brunt of everything in a way. You know, they don't get the flash things like some of the others, but you certainly
need. Well, they don't get movies made.
You're right.
TV shows. How many TV shows about patrol officers are there? I can think of one or two, but that's really about it. You know, everything else is about detectives or SWAT and stuff, you know.
And it's funny because the very first one that was on the BBC, going back to late 50s, I think, definitely black and white, Dixon and Doc Green was the very first one we had in England, and that was a police constable telling his story, what happened that week. And then next thing you know, it's, you get all the detectives, you know, coming on. So, yes, times have changed.
Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar. It's a relatively new show. The Rookie out. And it's actually a very good show, but they, you know, it's about patrol guys. Mm-hmm. And they're all rookies. And it's actually a very good show. And they roll, of course, you know, they've only got, what, an hour. Yeah. So they roll all of the issues a patrol officer has, especially on training, into single episodes. But it's actually pretty well done. So,
well, that's good. If you say it's pretty well done, it must be.
Yeah, I really enjoy the characters in the show.
But you've got the two. Are you gonna carry on with some more of these?
Yeah, I'm about not quite a third of the way through the third book, and then I want to do some standalone books. One of the heroes in both the first and second book is Father Richard Shannon, who is Lafleet's very best friend. They met in the military. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do a standalone book or two with Father Shannon. You know, the interesting thing is to see where the Sentinel series takes me. Yeah, third book, absolutely, and then I'll make a decision about a fourth or, you know, more books. What I don't want to do is wear out the character.
Right, yeah. And that's good, because I know a lot of times, I mean, not so much in this because it's your own experiences, but in a lot of books, the sort of minor characters tell the author they want their own book, you know, that they lead the author through. And you get that. You get characters that, you know, you didn't think were much, and people like them, and you know, you get people who've read the book saying, what about so-and-so? Where did they come from? Or what can you tell me about him? And it sounds like you've already got that covered.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have Father Shannon, you know, they're very interested in that character. Father Shannon, Lafleet and him met in the military. Lafleet was Force Reconnaissance, and Shannon was a Navy SEAL. And the two teams, the two guys and their teams, meet under hardcore adverse combat. And they forge a very deep friendship, as deep as brothers. In the first book, Shannon is a very, very predominant character. In the second book, not so much. He's still there. In the third book now, he's going to reemerge as almost as much a dominant character as Lafleet.
Okay. I mean, is he a priest, or, you know, being Father
Shannon? Yes, he's a priest, a Catholic priest. His job, and bear with me, but his job is when criminal offenses are committed against the church, and secular justice fails, his job is to move in and to take care of business,
okay,
either against the church or by a member of the church.
Right. I understand. It's like, I was thinking, because, again, going back many, many years, you used to have Father Brown on TV. I think I still see it on PBS sometimes over here. You know, was a priest who liked his bit of detecting on the side. But yours is a slightly different person.
Yeah, it is. And one of the comments when Lafleet is describing what Shannon does for the church, he says, well, you know, it's exactly like what I do as a detective, except Father Shannon tends to be the judge, jury, and at times even an executioner.
Right, indeed, yes. So, again, unfortunately, very much needed these days. But,
sadly, yes.
Yes, that's the way it goes. Okay, so you've got your plans laid out in front of you. You know, you've got your three on the go. You've got possibly four. You've got possibly another character to bring out in books and like that. What about your business? I mean, from the sound of it, I'm surprised I've even managed to catch you today.
Well, like I said, I did just get back from Uvalde, Texas, which is in the middle of nowhere down on the border. Taught a very good, I mean, the school went great, hostage rescue. Small class, but that's okay. Didn't need a big one at all for this one. For the business, you know, I'd like to retire. I'm 62. In law enforcement, that's considered old. In SWAT,
right,
I'm ancient. In SWAT. In fact, I'm like the extinct California cave bear, whatever the heck it was.
Right.
I'm considered ancient. But I have been asked, and I've been asked not to stand down, not yet. So I'll see. I'd like to give it at least another 2 or 3 years. I mean, next year's calendar is already filling up.
Wow.
So we'll see where that takes me. My passion, of course, is slowly turning to just writing, and I'd like to focus on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you've already got things, you know, partly planned already with that, and even though you're still doing all the other stuff, but it's been fascinating chatting to you. But as always, time is beating us. So what I'm going to do now, Mike, is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
Okay, well, first, the books they can order on Amazon Books. If they Google my name or Google Sentinel's Choice or Sentinel's Dilemma, of course, it'll take you that portal. Our website, and it's brand new, is it was rebuilt. It's sentinelschoice.com. Or, again, they can Google my name, and this pops up third or fourth on the list. They can also follow me if they want on Facebook. I've got they can follow my personal page, Michael Witzgall, or the SWAT business, Charlie Mike Enterprises, or just, you know what, Mike Witzgall, and that takes them to my author's page.
Great. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been great chatting to you. I had a feeling it was going to. Good luck with the future. Perhaps when your next book comes out, you come back and chat to us again.
I'd love to do that, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, my guest today, Mike Witzgall, Witzgall. There, I'm even speaking in American for you. Witz, as I would say, or Z to you, Witzgall. Been talking to him about his life, fascinating life, but also his now books. First off, Sentinel's Choice, which was his first novel, and now just come out is Sentinel's Dilemma. And as he said, you could find it sentinelschoice.com, or I had Mike Witzgall.com. Perhaps I'm sure if you look, just search online for Mike Witzgall, Witzgall, there you'll find him, as he said. Great stuff. And, you know, it's the sort of book that you want to read because you know that with Mike's experience, it's going to be correct. There's not going to be mistakes this person can't do this and this doesn't happen like this, because with his experience, you know that's going to be correct. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back here on New Visions Radio on Sunday at between 5 and 6 with Those Were the Days, my music from the 20th century. And the theme this week is hits not by the original singer. Something like that. But you get the idea. Anyway, and then, of course, after that, between 6:30 and 7:30 solid minutes of the British invasion. And then next Tuesday, I will be back again here at 6:30 with a book and a chat. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...